The letter to the Hebrews and to us. Commentary for the January 1st, 2022 Sabbath School lesson. Brothers and sisters, I urge you to bear with my word of exhortation, for in fact I have written to you quite briefly. Hebrews 13, verse 22. This quarter, we are looking at the Epistle to the Hebrews. This epistle is more fundamental to the theology of Seventh-day Adventists than to most other denominations because of our focus on the idea of a heavenly sanctuary modeled by the wilderness tabernacle of Moses and recreated in the temples of Solomon, Zerubbabel, and Herod. Most Adventists believe that Paul wrote the epistle. Paul's authorship was questioned as early as the 4th century by Eusebius, but that may be immaterial as, apart from authorship, the theology of the epistle was never seriously questioned, with even Eusebius quoting from it. Those who have proposed other authors have suggested Barnabas or Apollos, both of whom were close companions of Paul and fellow evangelists, raising and strengthening churches in his footsteps. The epistle's canonicity argues strongly for its authenticity, as it was widely supported and approved for the canon in an era in early Christianity noted for its anti-Semitism. The church had been moving for over 200 years to wean itself from Judaism, setting itself apart from the second Jewish revolt against Rome in the early 2nd century, and distinguishing themselves as followers of Christ as opposed to following the appointed high priest in Jerusalem. The relationship between the Jews and Christians during this time was more like a messy, protracted divorce, finally culminated in the late 4th century with the Council of Laodicea, which, along with forbidding the ordaining of women, also forbade practices considered Judaizing, such as the observance of the biblical Sabbath of the Decalogue. In this atmosphere, Hebrews may have found a favorable audience because it supplants the Aaronic high priest in Jerusalem with an eternal Melchizedekian priest in the person of Jesus Christ. Ironically addressed to the Hebrews, it represented a theological foundation for final severance from the idea of the earthly temple's continuing relevance. Notwithstanding this, some modern Christians still insist on its relevance and believe that rebuilding the earthly temple is an essential component of the parousia. Adventist theology, mostly due to Hiram Edson's cornfield vision, teaches that the sanctuary is only active in heaven, with implications for us on earth, but no longer applicable either to Jerusalem or to the Aaronic order, to the delight of the remainder of the hundreds of thousands of innocent animals exsanguinated on the grounds of that earthly temple. The Jews have long had to deal with the paradox of a faith based on the physical presence of the temple and its ongoing services when, at times, a desecrated or destroyed temple no longer provided those services. When the nation went into exile in Babylon for 70 years, the desolated temple could not succor the Jews in their distress. Eventually rebuilt by Zerubbabel, a later desecration by Antiochus Epiphanes, who stopped the temple services for 3.5 years, gave rise to the Maccabean Revolt and the eventual restoration of the temple services, an event commemorated by the celebration of Hanukkah. Once again, the Jews returned to the slaughter of animals to absolve and purify the taint of sin from their midst. While Zerubbabel's temple was a restoration of the temple before the Babylonian captivity, it was much the lesser compared to Solomon's temple. Therefore, Herod the Great resolved to build a much more magnificent temple. This was the temple the disciples proudly pointed out to Jesus at the beginning of Matthew chapter 24. Because the temple services did not cease during the reconstruction and transition to Herod's temple, some do not see it as a separate temple. This may be a facile explanation of the failure to recognize it as distinct from the Second Temple. There is reason to believe that the Jews were reluctant to grant recognition to Herod for its replacement, since he was an Edomite descended from Esau, not a descendant of Jacob. Dating back to the time of Ezra and Zerubbabel, the returned exiles opposed outsiders assisting with the reconstruction they were doing. As part of their agreement, Herod had to work around the actual temple building, as the priests insisted on doing the reconstruction of that part of the complex themselves. Despite all the effort to construct a magnificent temple, ensuring the continuation of the services there for generations to come, the temple was again destroyed approximately 75 years after Herod the Great's death. This was as Jesus foretold in that same passage in Matthew chapter 24. This time, however, the temple would not rise again and has remained desolate to the present day, almost 2 millennia later. Over all those centuries, the Jews dispersed across the globe, a persecuted and marginalized people. Millions of Jews perished in the death camps and the poison gas chambers that malevolently blossomed across the countries subjugated by German Nazism. Some might feel that the blood of all those animal sacrifices was replaced by the blood of so many human lives in the absence of the temple. This would add importance to the argument for rebuilding the temple anew. But as we shall see over the coming quarter, that argument is specious if the Aaronic order has been supplanted by a better, more efficacious one. Crucial to this realization is a passage that tells us, "It is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins," Hebrews 10:4. This begs the question, if they cannot purify us from our sins, why did all those animals have to die? The only reason was the stoniness of our own hearts towards suffering. Jesus stated that was the case when asked about the Mosaic ruling concerning divorce. Could it be that much of the draconianism in the Old Testament has foundation in the same reason? We can understand a little of that stoniness when we lovingly raise a calf, give it a name as a pet, and then go along to see what happens to the poor animal at the abattoir. The hamburger we eat today is farther removed from its source than the offering meat consumed by the penitent Jew, so it may be easier for us to be indifferent to the suffering, but both involve slaughter on an industrial scale. Despite the intensity of that, we still can take the idea of the death and misery of the cross in stride. It all has become such a part of who we are that we lose sight of the true character of God. At the same time as the priests ministered in the temple with their hands drenched in the blood of sacrificial animals, Jesus quoted the prophet Hosea, who in speaking for God said, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," Hosea 6:6. Humanity tends to become how they view the character of God. If God appears harsh, exacting, and vengeful, so grows the person. But if God appears loving, compassionate, and empathetic, those traits will grow within a person's heart over time. As we saw with the fate of Jesus, the former can destroy the latter, believing they are doing God's will in the process. Ironically, the destructive act consummated on Calvary provided a way out, while our hearts may seem as cold and as hard as granite, change is possible. God offers us the opportunity to rediscover what we were meant to be. We can turn from the coldness of death that plagues so many of our relationships. We often approach relationships asking what the other person has done for us lately. In other words, we require sacrifice on their part before we will open ourselves to a relationship with them. We even see this in our openness to God. We refuse to believe unless He does something for us first. Every breath we take, every bite we eat comes to us through the grace of God. We take for granted these things will always be there. But contemporary issues with global pandemics have taught us that we cannot even count on toilet paper, let alone food. There were weeks during the early days of the pandemic when finding more than a dozen eggs for sale in the store was a miraculous event. Our society is less agrarian than it used to be. There was a time before industrialized farming when people lived close to the soil and the cycle of the seasons. Farm families tended to be praying families. They understood faith in something greater than themselves each planting season. They could not control the rain or the storms, the frost, or the biting wind. They appealed to God's compassion, and not only did they find God's compassion during trial, but they also found that those prayers changed them as well. And they became like the God they believed in. They too became compassionate, rising and helping their neighbors when disease, injury, or other disaster threatened. This is what God intended with our creation. We were to love God, and with the grace found in his arms, to model his compassion through loving our neighbors. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You can find other commentaries like it at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. Along with hundreds of commentaries there, you can also find podcasts similar to this one. May God richly bless you and your family.